Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Years ago, you couldn't buy a drink at a Charlotte restaurant. Then lawmakers okayed liquor by the drink, no more brown bagging it. And as a result, the restaurant scene has flourished. Well, that was the beginning of a different public relationship with alcohol here. Today, we have become a mecca for breweries. There are bars on every corner. Wine bars have also made a dent. Broaden that out to the nation as a whole, and it's clear we live in a culture that likes alcohol. Beer and liquor ads are plentiful on TV. There are ads for various beverages on billboards. Just about everywhere you look, and almost every happy celebration involves alcohol. At the same time, something else is developing, a different take, a new attitude about drinking. There are those who are encouraging us to take a more mindful approach to alcohol consumption. This isn't about abstaining. It's more about how we drink, understanding why we drink, and thinking about and deciding whether or not we really want to. On New Year's Eve of 2018, one of our guests this hour released a book which asks the question, would life be better without alcohol? The subtitle of Sober Curious provides the answer. The blissful sleep, greater focus, limitless presence, and deep connection awaiting us all on the other side of alcohol. Author Ruby Warrington, a British writer and thought leader, joins us right now from a studio in New York City. Welcome to the program.
Hello, and thanks for having me.
Nice to have you here. In our studio is Rachel Armstrong, who started a Sober Curious meetup group here in Charlotte. Thank you for being here this morning.
Sure, good morning.
And Megan Batchelor is a Charlotte mom who has made a lifestyle choice to abstain from alcohol. And in the interest of full disclosure, you may know her voice because she works for us here at WFAE. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. We're going to talk to somebody from counseling in just a few minutes here, so stay with us for that. Ruby, let me start with you. You coined the term, as I understand it, Sober Curious. Where did it come from?
Well, sober curious is a term that I, came up with to describe my own evolving relationship to alcohol. It was around 8-9 years ago, 2010-11, I started questioning and getting curious about, I love the way that you introduced this segment, because actually, just before we came on, I was thinking about all of those things, you know, questioning what I call this dominant drinking culture that exists, the idea that alcohol is a key essential component in any kind of a happy, relaxed, fulfilling life, and also questioning my own consumption of alcohol and how much of an impact it was actually having on my overall well-being. I certainly didn't consider myself to be an alcoholic. I definitely didn't see that I had a problem with drinking. I was drinking the same amount, if not less than, the majority of the people that I kind of in my circle at the time. And yet I was very aware that alcohol didn't always make me feel good, whereas all of the messaging, as you rightly said, on, you know, billboards advertising drinks, on chalkboards advertising happy hour, says it all, right? Yeah. Was that alcohol was how I was going to feel good. Alcohol was what I needed to feel good. And yet that was no longer ringing true for me.
But I'm sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, no, so I coined this term sober curious to describe this questioning mind that I began to bring to my drinking experiences. And from there, I now no longer drink, having answered my sober curious questions for myself.
So I'm curious as to, how about that? I'm curious as to why you chose sober curious, because to me that sounds like you're flirting with the idea of being sober or with trying to be sober for a limited amount of time to see what it would like, trying it on for size. Why not mindful drinking?
It's an interesting. People often ask that question. For me, the concept of mindful drinking is a bit of an oxymoron. I think when we get really honest about it, most of us are using alcohol to get out of our mind, you know, to switch off those painful thoughts or to switch off the stress or to switch off some sort of mental trap we might find ourselves in. So the idea of mindful drinking, I don't use that term for that reason. For me, it really was about being curious about would life be better without alcohol? Like, what would it be like to not drink at all? But it's interesting, I also use that term to differentiate this from the path of sobriety, which a person might be led to in recovery from alcoholism.
Yeah.
So there's a differentiation there.
So how long did it take? I mean, you tried this on for size. I don't know when exactly in your process, when you were experimenting with distancing yourself from alcohol, that you came up with the name Sober Curious, or when you wrote the book. How long a time did that take before you started recruiting people to your side of the street?
Onto my cause? Yeah. Well, I first started speaking about it among my kind of friendship group in around 2015. So it was about 5 years into my own experimenting that I started to wonder, I wonder if I'm the only person asking these questions. I wonder if I'm the only person who has this conflicted relationship with alcohol. Yeah. Because it seemed to me that there were either the non-drinkers, and they were the people who couldn't drink because they were in recovery or because of religious reasons or perhaps because of health reasons. And then there were normal drinkers. And I felt that I was somewhere in the middle, and that there was nobody really talking about this gray area that does exist in between those two extremes. And I began to realize, just from having some conversations with friends, that perhaps many, many, many more people than would ever feel comfortable talking about it, or even feel like they needed to talk about it, were having these same conflicted feelings about alcohol.
You also started an organization called Club Soda NYC. Soda stands for Sober or Debating Abstinence. It started, I think, in your living room with, 10 people?
That's right.
How much has it expanded over what amount of time? And how does it work? Do you just sit around and talk? What happened with glasses of water? What do you do?
Well, the first Club Soda NYC meetup it was just a group of friends. I emailed a bunch of people I felt might be feeling the same as me, colleagues and sort of social acquaintances. And about 10 people showed up. We had a potluck dinner and we just spoke about what is alcohol in our lives? Like, why we don't want to drink. And yet, does that mean we're alcoholics? Does that mean we have to stop completely? Why is alcohol so everywhere? Like, all of these questions, just having a conversation, and it felt really good just to be able to share in the way that people do in kind of recovery circles. And at that point I realized that there was definitely a space for a wider conversation about this, and produced a much bigger ticketed event with a panel discussion and a group meditation, and that's what became Club Soda NYC. And the last one was actually at the end of last year, the last event, and we had over 200 people came to that one.
So in the introduction to your book, Sober Curious, you say that this inquiry began as a conversation with my body before the words fully crystallized in my mind. And you write about being hungover, your tongue being furry, and thinking, is this really all there is? Which leads to the obvious question, how heavy a drinker were you?
I had horrible hangovers, and I guess like many people, I was a bit of a binge drinker, I suppose. I would maybe drink, I would never drink more than two nights in a row. And not that I put rules around that, I just didn't want to, it didn't feel good. So I would typically not drink more than two nights in a row. During the week, I'd have maybe a couple of glasses of wine if I went out for dinner. And then at the weekends, I would probably have a bit of a binge. And
I was going to say, what does that mean to be a binge drinker in your mind? What is that?
Well, I'd be interested to hear what your expert has to say on this. I believe that it's anything over four or five drinks in one sitting. Over a certain period of time. I'm not sure of these specifics. But for me, that I would classify that drinking as drinking to get drunk rather than drinking just for the taste of the wine.
Well, I was going to bring Kelly Little into this conversation later in the program, but since you mentioned that she's here, I will introduce her. Kelly Little is a licensed clinical addiction specialist with the Dilworth Center. Hi.
Hi.
Define binge drinking for me.
So I think if you look at the official definition of binge drinking, it's anywhere from 3 to 4 drinks for a woman and 4 to 5 drinks for a man.
In a single setting. How long a period of time?
They haven't really defined that necessarily, but typically when it's talked about like in an evening.
So if you do this every day, if this is something that you do every night to relax or to have fun, that's obviously going to lead, is it going to lead to alcoholism?
It could. I mean, alcoholism is a complicated disease. There's lots of predisposing factors, but certainly habitual binge drinking or habitual drinking in general, daily drinking in general, is a huge risk factor and certainly something that's actually not typical, even though our society likes to pretend like it is.
So people who come home after a day at work and open a bottle of wine and have a glass,
sure.
Where would you put them?
Well, I think there's a lot of other factors that come into play. You know, what we look for when we're looking for a substance use disorder, which is kind of the new verbiage to discuss addiction, there's a criteria. There's 11 criteria in the Diagnostic Statistic Manual created by the American Psychological
Association. Which we're going to talk about later
okay.
in the program.
Yeah, so we can talk about that. But really, it's more about, does it interfere negatively right. with your life?
So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Ruby, the whole point of this conversation that we're having today and the conversation that you have in your book and what you talk about at Club Soda NYC is to think about drinking before you pick up the glass. Why am I doing this? Do I need to do this? What does this do for me? What does this do to me by having, because your book is about unlearning the mindless habit. This is what you say, the mindless habit of drinking and embracing the life-enhancing choice of sobriety. Do you think that most people who drink socially, whether it's in a bar or at home or around a barbecue at home, whatever, are they doing it simply out of habit as opposed to, I gotta have a drink?
Well, I wonder, I mean, where's the distinction there in a way? I mean, the first chapter of the book is called The Nature of the Beast. And it kind of presents my theory that actually many, many more of us than would see ourselves as alcoholic or take the label alcoholic are perhaps a little bit addicted to alcohol. And again, I'd love to hear Kelly's thoughts on this, but a big part of my message with Sober Curious as well is about destigmatizing conversations about addiction, because I do think that, like I said, many more of us than would ever feel safe or even feel like it applies to us to talk about the way we use alcohol in that way are possibly more dependent than is healthy. And when I say healthy, I mean, yeah, there are tons of negative health implications to habitual alcohol use on whatever end of the scale. But also healthy in, you know, how much am I really able to show up for my life, for my relationships? How much am I able to show up for my job? Like how much, what might I not be addressing in my life by using alcohol in the way that I do? And for me, you know, my alcohol use never got so bad that I had to stop. There's a term for people like me that some people use, and it's early exiter. Perhaps if I had continued drinking it the way that I had been without kind of, you know, having the wherewithal to get sober curious and begin to question, I would have, you know, perhaps if my drinking had coincided with some particularly difficult life event, as happens for many people, I would have then lent on it more heavily and developed a more serious addiction.
We know, Kelly, that alcohol is obviously an addictive substance. How addictive is it in comparison to other drugs that we know cause really serious problems as well as alcohol's problems?
It's actually on the higher end in terms of addictive quality. It really is. Mm-hmm. If you look at the amount of people who use alcohol and the amount of people who are addicted to alcohol, I think it's somewhere in the percentage of 4 to 6% of people who use alcohol have an official addiction that's diagnosed and treated, which means lots more have the addiction that's not diagnosed or treated. But it's fairly addictive.
Kelly Little is the licensed clinical addiction specialist at the Dilworth Center. We'll talk more with her as well as with Ruby Warrington, who has written this book called Sober Curious. And then we will meet when we come back. We'll meet two people who are on this bandwagon locally here in Charlotte. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Mike Collins. The political world has its attention on the presidential race, but local elections coming up will have a bigger impact on the day-to-day lives of Charlottians. 7 Democrats are on the ballot for city council at large in next month's primary. Join Charlotte Talks for a live forum with the candidates Wednesday, August 28th at 7 p.m. at Spirit Square's McGlowan Theater. And send your questions for the candidates to charlottetalks at wfae.org. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about this movement, Sober Curious, where you are taking a look at your alcohol consumption and being more mindful of how you consume. It is not an abstinence program. It is not AA. It is just a way to look at how you consume alcohol, and maybe you decide to consume less, or at least you know why you're picking up that glass. Ruby Warrington is kind of the person who put the name to it, Sober Curious, and her book is called Sober Curious, The Blissful Sleep, Greater Focus, Limitless Presence, and Deep Connection Awaiting Us All on the Other Side of Alcohol. Who are you focusing this book? Who are you looking for in this book? Who do you want to attract to this, if you want to call it a lifestyle, or at least this thought process? Who are you going after?
Honestly, this book, I believe, or this, as you say, this kind of this movement, that's what's become a movement, is for anybody who has ever found themselves asking those questions, for anybody who's found themselves questioning alcohol. And for many people, I think that can be a very internal, very private thing at first, especially if, you know, your social group, your family interactions, perhaps your interactions with your colleagues, if they all revolve around alcohol, which for many of us they do, it can be a very lonely place to find yourself questioning. So I really wanted to, and so many people have reached out and just said, thank you for putting my thoughts onto a page. Thank you for helping me define the questions that I have around alcohol and for helping me begin to find my own answers. So truly it's for anybody who finds themselves questioning.
Well, you're obviously having an impact because I have two people sitting in front of me here in the studio in Charlotte who have taken up the gauntlet. Rachel Armstrong is here. She started a Sober Curious meetup group online, and I guess you've expanded it. We'll talk about that. Welcome to the program. And Megan Batchelor is here. She's a mom in Charlotte who is abstaining and also works for us here at WFAE. So, Rachel, how did you find out about this movement? Because you call yours a Sober Curious meetup group.
Sure.
How did you find out about this?
I actually saw an online article that said it was geared towards Charlotte, the Charlotte area, and it mentioned Sober Curious, and I just thought that was a great term, so I started Googling sober hangouts, and it turns out there's next to nothing in the city of Charlotte for a sober hangout, but I was finding them in, I guess I probably found Miss Warrington's group in New York, and I was seeing sober bars in places like New York and LA, and it's just not here, and so I have a lot of friends. I'm recently a part of this movement, June 28th. I stopped drinking, just decided, why not? Let's see. And it's very much a sober, curious thing for me, too.
How much were you drinking?
Not very often. I identify with Ruby here that it was a social activity, and it wasn't something where maybe probably every 2 weeks or so.
So when you drank, did you drink to excess, or did you just wonder, why am I spending all this money on alcohol?
Both. I spent a lot of years where I guess you would call me a quote-unquote party kid. I mean, I was out with a group at a bar and shooting pool and hanging out, and that's kind of what we did every weekend. I'm from a small town, and there just isn't a lot to do. So moving to Charlotte, I thought, hey, there's going to be a lot more to do, and it turns out there's actually not. There's more bars.
But you can't go to a bar and not drink. You can't go to a bar and order Sprite.
No,
you can't go to a bar and order club soda.
You can, but it's what's interesting is the reaction of everybody that's drinking. Everyone
the
wants
heck
to.
With them.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. But it's annoying to have somebody constantly trying to shove a drink in your hand when you just simply don't want it. Or maybe you have a hangover and it smells terrible. You know, you just don't want it. You don't want any more.
So when you started your meetup group, your Sober Curious meetup group, how long did it take you to get traction, to get people to be part of it?
Oh, well, we have been actually live on meetup.com now for, I think, 2 weeks today. And I looked this morning and we have over 140 members after 2 weeks. And I've done absolutely no advertising. I mean, I checked Meetup about a month ago whenever I was looking for things to do that were sober activities. I searched the word sober in Charlotte and it popped up with zero results. And so it was really disappointing that I'm in this big metropolis of Charlotte and there's nobody wanting to hang out and do sober things. So I just decided, what the heck, we'll just start a meetup group.
So have you hung out?
Yeah, we've done two.
And when you do, in the absence of alcohol, is there fun?
Yeah, there's tons of fun to be had. I'm insistent on that point for sure.
The people who sign up, the people that you've already met in this meetup group,
yeah.
Are they coming to you because they're like you? They just question, what am I doing this for? I don't even like it. Or are they people who never drink and are just looking for a place to go and people to be with who won't make them feel like they have to drink or have to say, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah,
I won't do
it's
that.
All across the board. I've met people who just moved to Charlotte and they're looking for things to do other than bars and breweries. Maybe they do drink occasionally, but they're just looking really more for companionship and good friends, people that want to build relationships apart from alcohol. Mm-hmm. And then I've met a couple of people who maybe they were in recovery or are in recovery at some phase in their journey, and they just want to hang out with normal people that aren't going to put drinks in their hands.
As you listen, Ruby, to Rachel talk about what the scene is like here in Charlotte, and I'm sure you have your tentacles out all over the country and perhaps elsewhere around the world, are you hearing something that resonates with you? Are you hearing a familiar story?
Absolutely. In fact, since my book came out, people have been reaching out from across the country, from across the globe. I have had people from Oslo, from Berlin, from all over the U.S. Please bring Sober Curious here. Wow, how can I start a meetup? Well, there's nothing where I live for people who don't want to drink but who still want to socialize and hang out. And so there's obviously a huge, huge untapped market there for, alcohol-free socializing. And in fact, even just this year, the whole the industry around alcohol-free drink options, alcohol-free bars, as Rachel mentioned, they're sort of beginning to pop up everywhere. And it's just been very exciting to witness. Wow, okay, yes, lots more people want this than, as I said, probably ever felt like it was okay to talk about it until now, I think.
So let me turn my attention to this woman with whom I work. Megan Batchelor, you describe yourself in our – we always get our producers to to get our guests to describe themselves as a mom.
Yes.
You're a mom.
I am a mom.
And
I have a 4.5-year-old.
And if I recall reading, and you have a – this is a stressful job.
Yeah,
it's broadcasting. but as I recall reading, at some point you would buy these boxes of wine.
Yes,
that's your
absolutely.
First mistake.
They are not bad. I will say that they are not bad. Or maybe I was just so used to having, you know, a glass or two of wine every night that I was like, well, this is the most economical. But yes, so boxes of wine, and there are multiple brands, you know. So that was just the standard weekly purchase.
So how much would you say you drank?
Usually 2 drinks a night.
And that's excessive to you? 2 glasses of wine?
I don't know. I don't know if I ever...
At home, right?
You didn't drive? No, I didn't drive. No,
okay.
Usually at home. But I mean, and then on weekends you add, you know, you stop at a brewery in the afternoon and then you have your 2 drinks, at night at home. And I think people don't realize that it is just, you mentioned it earlier, it is just commonplace and it is just, oh, this is just what I do.
I get
home and I have a glass of wine and... It comes from a box.
As I understand it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you started a diet that emphasizes whole foods, the elimination of sugar, which is what alcohol turns to, alcohol, grains, legumes. Why legumes? Soy and dairy. It eliminates all of that. And then a month after you started, you had a single glass of wine. And you felt hungover for days?
For days, absolutely. And so, you know, I took to Facebook and I was like, okay, who else has done this diet? How do I reintroduce alcohol? You know, at first it didn't even occur to me that maybe alcohol was what was not working for me. I was like, okay, who can help me figure out how to bring this back into my life? But yes, I had, you know, a fogginess, a headache, kind of a lethargy for 2-3 days after just that one glass of wine after not going 30 days.
So I have a question, Ruby. I have 4 women on the program today. One's a clinical therapist or addiction specialist, so we'll take her out of the equation. But I'm talking to you and to Rachel and to Megan. Is this a female thing, or are there men involved in this too?
You know what? There are many men also reaching out to me saying, where can I find more men to talk to about this? I actually think there are, and again, I think Kelly is someone who may be able to speak to this, but there are perhaps more severe health risks for women, particularly the relationship between alcohol and breast cancer is now being spoken about more and more. However, and so people have said to me, this is more for women, right? But actually, I think that for men, there's even more stigma around choosing not to drink, particularly in the kind of, you know, the sort of bro-y kind of jock culture. There's this idea of like being able to hold your own in the sports bar with the guys is like part of what it means to be a man. And I actually think it's much, much harder for men to kind of like to turn away from that and to go against that grain. I also, you know, there are a couple of other things playing into it. you could see, as Megan kind of experienced as well, this is an extension of what of the sort of wellness revolution that we're seeing, which is largely female-led. It's a very kind of female-led industry. And so when we talk about things like diets, exercise, and healthy living, that's typically a more female kind of zone. And as Megan experienced, you know, you once you've invested more in a healthy lifestyle, the way that alcohol makes you feel becomes so much more evident. You know, this is a toxin. Yes, your body is going to let you know you've just been imbibing a toxic substance, right? And then the other piece is that I think just typically in our society and our culture, it's more okay for women to talk about their feelings. It's more okay for women to be vulnerable. And oftentimes, you know, talking about something like, hey, I'm not feeling so confident about the way alcohol's in my life, or there's just more, it's just easier, I think, that's more acceptable for women to talk about these kinds of things.
So a few minutes ago, I said this is not an abstinence movement. This is not Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a place to go or a movement, or it's a movement, where you can find like-minded people who can feel comfortable and have fun without alcohol. But people who are in this movement, correct me if I'm wrong, I'll hear from all three of you about this who are a part of this. This is a sliding scale. You may choose not to drink tonight with friends or at home after work, but you may go out on Friday night and have a glass of beer or a glass of wine. You may do that. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yeah. This is for my part, I'll jump in. For my part, this is really about giving you all of the tools and all of the permission to get educated, to understand, like you said, your how and your why for drinking. And with that information, to really learn to trust your own experience and to trust what works for you. For many, many people, however, given the nature of the beast, that this is a highly addictive, one of the five most addictive substances, toxic substance that has all of these horrible side effects, for many people, the right decision for me is to no longer drink.
Okay.
I'd be interested to hear from Megan, like, having that one glass of wine, like, yes, I might still, for example, have a glass of champagne at a friend's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
However, the last time I tried that, the champagne made me feel so horrible. I realized that I wasn't going to enjoy the experience nearly as much
exactly.
if I continued to drink. So I put it down and I let it, I didn't even desire it anymore because I'd become so aware and so conscious of the real impact of alcohol versus the kind of the messaging and the image of alcohol that we're presented with.
Absolutely.
But there's no judgment here. It's not like you go into this group because there's something wrong with you. You're going into this group because there's something right with you, and it's not like falling off the wagon or losing your chip because you had a drink after 6 months of not having a drink. It's just that you are mindful of when you do drink and why you're doing it, and you know you can cut it off. You're nodding in agreement.
Absolutely. And likewise, for many people, it might be, oh, you know what? This is harder than I thought. Perhaps I do need a support group. Perhaps AA is the right thing for me. Perhaps I need that 12-step program. And I've seen that happen equally. And people who have used sober curiosity as a stepping stone to full-blown recovery.
Rachel.
I just wanted to make the distinction for me that it's not I'm not in recovery. I don't feel like I get to wear that badge proudly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that I necessarily struggled with. In fact, I kind of consider it a blessing in my life that I can put it down. And so if I can put it down, why am I not putting it down when there are so many people that I know that struggle with it? They literally cannot have one drink. So I think sober curious is really the right term for it.
So Kelly, those people that she just referred to, the people who really can't stop at one drink, I guess they would be clinically called alcoholics.
Sure.
They have a chemical reaction to alcohol and they can't stop. This is not an approach for them, the sober curious. We know that Alcoholics Anonymous works for a lot of people. Would this be a good substitute, or is it not strong enough?
I don't think it's necessarily a substitute. I do agree with Ruby when she says it might be a first step. So really diving into recovery, going to treatment, going to a 12-step program is a scary decision. A lot of people aren't ready for that as their first step. A lot of people will start with an individual therapist or talking to a preacher at church or something like that. And I think this type of a movement can be a great first step. Let me see if I can back off. Let me see if I can be more mindful or be curious about sobriety. And if the answer to that is no, then maybe I'm ready to go to treatment or do something bigger.
In one of the articles that I read about this, there's a quote, "Alcohol is the only drug you have to justify not using."
So true. Yeah.
And that is the pressure that you're talking about. I've never felt that pressure.
It's there.
Well, I'll tell you why I've never felt it, because I'm the cheapest person you've ever met. And to go to a bar and just spend a couple of hours there slugging back beers or having a hard liquor drink, that's expensive.
You also have to think about, though, coming from a female perspective or a single female's perspective, a lot of times that is a dating thing. You know, you can go out to the bar and a lot of women don't necessarily pay for their beverages. So it's easy to go and sit at the bar for a couple of hours and meet friends and meet guys and have them continuously put drinks in your hand. It's really easy. I don't know about for men. Maybe it's not as common for you bros to buy each other drinks, but for the girls, it's pretty easy to sit at a bar and get some free drinks.
Yeah. Well, is the pressure to not drink, does the pressure come because you're the odd man out, or the fact that consuming alcohol at all these different functions and in all these different places is simply the norm, and you're
Absolutely.
Going against the norm when you don't.
Absolutely. I think, as women, people automatically assume you're pregnant, that the only reason you would not be drinking is either you are in recovery and you have, a capital P problem, or you're pregnant. That's, people don't consider that you might just not want to drink. I just don't want to drink right now. It's just so commonplace that I think no one, even considers that possibility.
From Ruby's book to the two of your stories, Rachel and Megan, there's a recurring theme, and it is the odd man out isolation of those who do not drink or those who choose not to drink. Megan, you say it almost feels subversive.
It does.
Not to drink. Rachel, you were fascinated by the limitations not drinking seemed to place on fun. Why am I the exception to this rule? I have never felt odd ordering a club soda.
I don't know.
Never.
I don't know. I see it a lot, I guess. I mean, you can even go to Chuck E. Cheese, and there's alcohol at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yep.
You need it at Chuck E. Cheese.
Right? You quote-unquote need it, yeah. Yep. So same thing with, these mommy groups. I don't know if you're a part of those, Megan, on Facebook, but I've seen them where the moms get together and watch toddlers, and they all wine together. It's
crazy. We're going to talk about that when we come back, because there's a whole mommy phenomenon attached to consuming alcohol. We're here with Ruby Warrington, the author of Sober Curious, Rachel Armstrong, who started her own meetup group under that title here in Charlotte, Megan Batchelor, who's abstaining, and Kelly Little, who's a licensed clinical addiction specialist. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Sober Curious, the movement and the book. The book is by our guest, Ruby Warrington. The blissful sleep, greater focus, limitless presence, and deep connection awaiting us all on the other side of alcohol. Really? You get all that out of not drinking? Is that what happens, Ruby?
I just firstly want to say I apologize for such a long subhead. It's like for anybody ever interviews me and has to repeat that several times. These are all things I have experienced, yes.
Wow. NPR reports that while there is virtually no downside to taking a break from drinking alcohol or quitting altogether, science is just beginning to study the ways abstinence might be good for it. Might be good for us? Might be good. That's a quote from NPR, so I'm going to say it. Science has told us that a glass of red wine every day is probably good for us, but they haven't done studies on being a teetotaler and what that does. Why not? Anybody?
Well, I will jump in. I did see a study recently. It came out in Canada. I can't remember who it was from, but it just came out a month or so ago. And they had created a study, and the people who had the highest quality of mental health were lifelong abstainers, people who had never taken an alcoholic drink in their lives. And it also showed that when
that includes the president, by the way,
it was women who had abstained for 4 years or longer were the first people to kind of increase or improve their levels of mental health to that same level. So that's one thing that I saw that came out recently.
The Washington Post, in exploring the sober movement, points out that alcohol has steadily seeped into the social fabric of motherhood.
It has.
They report thermoses of mommy juice on the soccer field sidelines and memes that state it's not really drinking alone if your kids are home. Wow.
Yikes.
So studies show that women, especially women in their 30s and 40s, are drinking more than ever before. And Megan, you mentioned people calling a wine glass mommy's sippy cup.
Yes, which is, I mean, again, a very commonplace thing. And I want to, you know, preface everything I'm saying that, you know, this is just my experience
with
being a mom and abstaining from alcohol. But that that mommy wine culture, you know, mommy needs her juice. Mommy's had a tough day. Pour a bottle. It's everywhere. And I think I didn't realize it until I stopped drinking. And then I just saw it's on T-shirts. It's on the internet.
It's giving permission for mommies to drink because they need a drink because their job is so hard. And their job is hard. I'm not minimizing their job, but you need a drink.
You need a drink. You deserve a drink. Go ahead. Have a drink. I actually did not even really drink wine before I had a child. And I think that messaging of moms need wine, moms get wine, this is just what you do, kind of seeped in. And I said, okay, I buy wine by the box now.
Is this coming from Madison Avenue or is this just coming from social media? Moms need a drink.
I think it's all of the above. I think it's kind of the messaging everywhere. You know, of course, you go to Target and there's, like she said, 10 shirts saying something to the effect of after a long day, you need wine. So,
so before we asked you on this program today, Kelly, had you heard of or were you familiar with the Sober Curious movement?
Yeah, I've definitely heard of it. I haven't read the book yet. I'm very interested. Now I'm going to go get it and read it. You know, I think it's a really cool message, and I hope that a lot of people are interested in it and getting on board with it. And I love having this conversation because I think there's a lot of intuition on this isn't treatment, this isn't AA or a 12-step program. And so if you need that in addition to the Sober Curious movement, please pursue that.
Well, this is for people who have clearly made a decision or they want to try this to see what life would be like.
Yeah.
Could they put up with the pressures of not drinking? It's a decision that they've made. People who maybe need AA can't make that decision because they're already addicted to this substance. But the people who are attracted to Sober Curious are conscious of their drinking habits. Those who are not, those who may be developing an addiction, are they conscious of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a misconception that an alcoholic, someone with a substance use disorder, can't stop drinking.
Okay.
There are certainly people with alcoholism who are physically dependent, need a drink when they wake up. But really, actually, a lot of the people that I treat might just be binge drinkers on the weekends. But when they start drinking, they don't stop until Monday morning.
So becoming part of the Sober Curious movement, adopting the tenets of this philosophy, could that prevent you from becoming an alcoholic or having a substance abuse problem because you cut it off at the start of what may be becoming a problem for you?
I think there's definitely something to be said about that early exiter type of a person. Maybe they would have developed full-blown addiction down the line. It's a progressive disease, so it only gets worse over time if you don't do something different about it. But I don't think that someone who is on the path towards developing addiction or has started that process can stop and then start back again and have a quote-unquote healthy or normal relationship.
So clearly these people were able to stop. They just decided, I'm going to try this, and it's not going to – and it has no effect on you except for the fact that you feel better. Is that right? Am I putting words in your mouth here? You're feeling better.
No, I definitely do feel better. I'm glad that I made that decision. But I do think that there are people who are in recovery who still want to associate with people who consider themselves sober curious because there's not as much of a stigma on that.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe don't want to hang out with all folks who are in recovery. They want to just hang out with quote-unquote normal people, you know, who've just elected not to drink.
So, Rachel, are you experiencing blissful sleep? Sleep, greater focus, limitless presence, and deep connection awaiting us all?
Yes, all of the above. Side. Check, check, and check.
Seriously, you are.
Yeah, seriously, no, truly. Feel much better.
Megan?
I mean, I have a 4-year-old, so to the extent that I'm able, yes, I Better sleep, absolutely. I think a little bit more confidence. I didn't realize that something that I thought having a glass of wine, having a beer, was taking the edge off, was reducing anxiety. And now I realize that it was actually, in hindsight, adding to it and in building to it a little bit. Sleep better, a little bit more confident, a little bit, you know, happier throughout the day. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, Ruby, when did these effects become noticeable to you?
Almost immediately, I would say. But then again, like, one of the reasons I am an advocate for abstinence rather than the kind of mindful drinking, still drinking sometimes. I really am an advocate. I think that an abstinent, I think that really is, like, we all could all benefit from just quitting completely. Why not? But really, for me, the effects kind of compound themselves over time. And it was over, I remember after, you know, my stints of not drinking would get longer and longer as I kind of experimented and enjoyed not drinking more and more and would feel less called to going back into it or trying to pick it up again. And I remember after kind of like my first sort of like 2 months or so, a whole other level of just kind of general well-being. And when I say well-being, I mean just feeling like I'm okay, life is okay, would kind of kick in. And I just Megan mentioned confidence, and I talk about something that I call the confidence paradox in my book. Again, so many of us use alcohol to feel more confident, particularly in social situations. But I just really realized how without drinking, whether, you know, not having that substance clouding my perception, clouding my thinking, clouding my decision-making abilities, etc. But also the confidence that I had built up through repeatedly resisting, as you say, that kind of pressure, repeatedly saying, yeah, I'm going to do what I'm going to do versus instead of what everyone else is telling me to do, just built this inner confidence that, like, I can pretty much handle whatever life throws at me. And that is a feeling that builds over time, and probably really only kicked in over months, if not years, of continually going against the grain and making decisions based on my truth, my experience, versus what the world was telling me to do.
Alcohol can affect everybody differently, it seems to me, but that perhaps this feeling of confidence that it allegedly gives some people is the fact that they can be loud and sloppy and they don't realize it, and it feels confident to them. Mm. I had a question for you, Kelly. I'm trying to figure out what it was. Some people can take or leave alcohol. Sure. They're okay with it. They're okay without it. They stop when they start feeling a little tipsy, and they don't need any more after that. Or they can go for weeks, months, and never take a drink. I guess alcoholics can't do that. But even in spite of that, you say there is no such thing as a healthy relationship to alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's another one of those terms that feels like an oxymoron to me, really. I mean, you can have a relationship with alcohol that isn't necessarily unhealthy or doesn't negatively affect your life. But I don't really know if even the studies that say a glass of wine every night, a glass of red wine, really those have been disproven. You have to have like 4 bottles of red wine in order to get the amount of antioxidants for it to be healthy for you.
You mean my doctor and Morley Safer are wrong?
Yeah, I mean, probably. Yeah, it's really just not true.
You alluded to these 11 different criteria for substance use disorders that are part of the
Diagnostic Statistic Manual.
Okay. Yep. And you say that meeting 2 to 3 of these different criteria equates with a mild substance abuse disorder, and that somebody with 4 or 5 or 6, then trouble is brewing for them. What are some of the signs? What are some of those things that you look for?
Yeah, so several years ago, the American Psychological Association published the 5th edition, and they moved from really black and white, yes or no, you're an alcoholic, to more of a spectrum. So that's where this kind of 2 to 3, 4 to 5, 6 to 11 chunks came from. The criteria are things like tolerance, withdrawal, cravings. And when we talk about craving, it's not necessarily that your body physically needs it. It might be a mental obsession that you have, and that's more of the craving. But then also things like, has it interfered with relationships? Has it interfered with work or school? Really getting into, is this negatively affecting your life, and are you continuing to use despite those negative consequences?
In some areas of the country, I think New York is among them. I think somebody just, I think maybe it was you, Ruby, who mentioned this, that this movement, this sober, curious movement, has led to the establishment of alcohol-free bars. That's true?
Absolutely, yeah. There are two now in New York.
How do they make money? They just charge quadruple
the price
of a Coke?
Well, this is interesting. My husband works in hospitality in the hotel industry, and he's skeptical as to the business model and whether it can actually work, because bars survive by the fact that people are going to come in and they're not going to order one drink, they're going to order five. And there's a much higher markup on alcoholic products as well. However, coffee shops survive. Mm-hmm. So I have faith that there is absolutely a market for these places, these spaces, and that they will thrive. There's a great bar. My favorite is called Getaway. It's in Brooklyn. And they have an incredible cocktail list, very sophisticated, absolutely delicious drinks that you would pay. You know, they're charging $12, $13 for a cocktail without alcohol in it. But they're so delicious and flavorsome and complex that you will sip it over, you know, half an hour.
You're making Rachel sitting here making faces at that.
New York prices.
Why are you doing
the
that?
The prices, yeah, well, right.
Okay, so the prices and the fact you're drinking $12 juice, essentially. Yeah. Like, that's crazy to me.
No,
but
well, it's really not. There are all sorts of alcohol-free spirits coming onto the market now.
Wait a minute. What's an alcohol spirit?
An alcohol-free spirit. There's a brand called Seedlip, which I think it launched in the UK about 3 years ago and has since been bought by Diageo. There are a couple more in the UK, one called Cedars, another one called Baragio, and these are they use a distillation process to create a complexity of flavor, but they contain no alcohol, and so they're used as mixers to make more sophisticated, more complex, yeah, alcohol-free drinks.
Are there alcohol-free bars in Charlotte yet?
Not that I have seen. So, and that's like my pie in the sky idea. If I had my way, I would have a sober venue, like a sober safe space. And I like that.
Starbucks.
Sure.
They sell alcohol.
On every corner.
They do.
Starbucks
have alcohol now.
Caribou. Sure, you can have any of those things, but what about the people that don't like coffee or don't just want to sit in a coffee shop? Like, where do they go to hang out on the weekends? And so if these people are part of my sober curious group.
But wait a minute, aside from the smell of the coffee, what's the difference between hanging out in the bar and hanging out at the coffee shop?
Well, what if you don't want to just hang out and like be seated? What if you want to do activities like play pool? Where would you play pool that's not
or
in a
dance.
Bar?
All right. You're not going to dance to a DJ in a Starbucks.
Yeah, you can't have this kind of fun, quote unquote, and somebody who would be part of Sober Curious that's actually in recovery is very limited on their places that they can hang out. It's really unfortunate.
So let me share some things that have come in from listeners as we've been talking. Stephanie on Facebook, I quit in June and have never felt better. Peter emails, I quit drinking years ago and have never felt better. I wake up every morning with a clear head. When I did drink, I drank beer every day, 7 days a week. The recycle bin was always full of gold Coors cans. Amy emails, I'm 39 and have been to a 4-day retreat where there was no alcohol. When the organizers were asked why the no alcohol rule, they said, we are not against the use of alcohol. We want to give you an experience that is unique, and going to the bar, having drinks, and socializing is not unique. Mm-hmm. They wanted us to embrace the uncomfortable awkwardness of meeting and connecting with new people without the use of alcohol. The long weekend changed my life. I would wager that she feels better too. Are you surprised? About a minute and a half left here, Ruby. Are you surprised at how much this movement has grown since you wrote this book?
The writing was on the wall, just the way that the Club Soda NYC group was growing. But honestly, I am surprised and also just so overjoyed that actually so many people are now finding the permission, like I said, to investigate alcohol, to question the status quo, and to really, as we've heard from the people who've been in the studio today and also from the people who've written in, to just like really feel better, to feel more confident, to remove this substance which causes so many people so many problems and is just kind of a massive, I think, health problem that's hidden in plain sight.
So you want us to be mindful about our alcohol consumption. What question should we ask ourselves before we open that bottle of wine or pop the top on that beer can?
Is this helping? Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, Ruby, but is this going to help me?
Ruby, go ahead.
I would say, why am I taking this drink? And be really honest with yourself about it. If there's anything in there that's like to please other people or to change the way I feel, don't do it.
Ruby Warrington, the author of Sober Curious, The Blissful Sleep, Greater Focus, Limitless Presence, and Deep Connection, awaiting us all on the other side of alcohol. Rachel Armstrong, who has a super Sober Curious meetup group in Charlotte at meetup.com. Megan Batchelor from here, and Kelly Little, a licensed clinical addiction specialist. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.